Now, water, I'm sure you all know, but I'm going to point out a very profound fact about water for you, is that it is fascinating. It really is. Water is a fascinating thing. And you may think, what are we talking about? Water is fascinating. If you were to put up a wall, just randomly anywhere, you decided, I'm going to put a wall up somewhere. And you made it big, you made it long, you made it tall, however you want to do, you've built a wall. And it's a beautiful wall, it's a lovely wall, and it's doing a great job of itself being a wall. And if you were to take and you were to throw something at it, you dirt, sand, trees, cats, dogs, whatever you happen to throw at that wall, it would stop at the wall. And I'm not just saying that you would take a handful of sand and just kind of toss it at the wall and go, oh, look, it stopped at the wall. It's fantastic. But if you were to constantly just bombard and barrage that wall with debris and items and things, eventually those things would pile up on your side of the wall. But if you happened to walk around the other side, it wouldn't be there. There would be no debris, there would be no rocks, there would be no dirt, there would be no nothing of whatever it was that you happened to throw at the wall. And you could say, great, I built a wonderful wall. Now, if you were to do the same thing with water, you would end up with a different result. Now, water, if you're throwing that at that wall and spraying it at the wall and having it constantly hit the wall, water isn't just going to pile up on your side of the wall. Water is eventually going to find a way to the other side of the wall. There might be a little gap at the bottom where the soil and the base didn't quite meet up. Or there might be a little crack in the wall that, not being stonemasons, any of you didn't quite fill properly. Or maybe, just maybe, you didn't build your wall long enough. And the water eventually flows around and finds the edge and goes by. But at some point, you will go to the other side of your wall, wading through all that water that you've just sprayed, and you will discover water on the other side of your wall. Does that sound fairly reasonable? This is an experience that I had, and a frustration I had when I worked at Western Christian College as their campus services manager. One of my jobs, my portfolio umbrella, was the maintenance of the building. And if you think that I should be in charge of maintaining a building, we should all have a good chuckle over that. That we know there's trouble here. I hired good people to do that for me. And here's the problem. The challenge is it's a flat roof. We have a flat roof here. It's a flat roof. And water would come down, it would sit on the roof, and it would come into a crack, and it would leak in the ceilings, and it would drip in the building, and we would try and fix that. And so part of the solution was to put buckets out. And then the other parts of the solution was to maybe try and find in the ceiling where the water is coming down from, and maybe seal that from the inside. But no matter what we did, the water still came. So ultimately what we said, well, we need to fix the roof. Right? This makes sense. You with me on this? And so not only did we just tar the roof, that's a small fix, but we foamed that roof. I mean, we sealed this thing the best that is humanly possible to seal this roof. And we thought, haha, water, we've got you now. And the next time that it rained, and the next time that the snow and melted and it pooled on, lo and behold, oh look, there's water dripping down the ceiling again. Because the water then said, wait, we need to find another way in. And so it would roll and it would flow and it would find another way in to the building. And then we would look up and we would say, here's the water dripping down, but now where is it coming from? Because I know up there it's sealed. The water was coming from way over there at a roof that we didn't fix and running along and finding its way through the nooks and the crannies and the spaces to drip and be where I don't want it to be. The point is, water finds a way to get to where it wants to go, whether you want it to or not. Water is fascinating, and it is frustrating. And we may have seen some of that even in our own church building here, and Rick's probably dealt with some of that. Chuck, I know you've had some fun dealing with some of that too, and you know, we don't want to deal with it anymore, right? We've fixed it. There's no more water. Water is fascinating. And it gets to where it wants to go. It finds a way. Now the time has finally come for the Israelites to enter into the promised land. Now there have been several setbacks. There have been several questions and general rebellions along the way, but now it is time. The people have been camped along the banks of the River Jordan, across from the city of Jericho. Spies have been sent in. The report back has been favorable. There is an expectant but also hesitant energy within the camp. And while for most everyone in the camp, with Caleb and Joshua being the exceptions, this is a new experience, there is a history that seems to be playing out again. This is not the first time that the Israelites have gathered on the edge of Canaan with a mind to going in, with instructions from God to enter in and claim it. And that last time it didn't go very well. If you recall back when Moses was leading the charge and he said, "Great, go in, God has given you the land." He sent the 12 men in to spy, and Caleb and Joshua were two of them, and they went in, and the report came back from 10 of them that this is a horrible, terrible place that we'll never take it. We're going to get crushed by all the giants and we should run away in terror. And Caleb and Joshua said, no, man, it's nothing. God's bigger than all of these guys. We got this. And the Israelites said, "Nope, it's too big for us." And they ran away. And a generation passed in the desert, died out, so a new generation could come and try again. And so the question for this generation, camped on the shores of the River Jordan, is, will this time be any different? Will this generation of Israelites go forward in the power of God, or will they, like their ancestors, retreat back into the desert, defeated by rumor and fear? But this is a different generation. This is a generation that has learned from the lessons of the past. This is a generation that will trust in God's promises. This is a generation that chooses to look past their fear to see the victory that God can bring. And so they set out. And Joshua, their new leader, encourages them on with rousing speeches about the great wonders they will see God perform on this day. And dust clouds form as thousands of feet begin to march towards their first target, the city of Jericho. And then they come to it. An obstacle. And not just a little obstacle. This is a significant obstacle. Not just a little hurdle along the racetrack of life. This is a significant barrier. The River Jordan lies before them. Its banks are overflowing with the spring runoff and rains. The water is rushing by so quickly and at such great depth that even the well-known fords that people would normally cross at are unrecognizable and unsafe. There's a pause, hesitation. How can they get to Jericho and claim the victory God has promised if they can't get across the river? Now, it's all fine and good for God to promise victory, but at the moment, all the Canaanites are going to see is a bunch of people confusedly milling about on the other side of the river. Was something missed? Did someone in the Israelite camp do something to bring about God's disfavor? Why would he lead them to this place in this moment only to be defeated by water? And then history repeats itself again. Only this time it is not a reminder of history of a moment the first time the Israelites were told to enter this land, but it is from a bit further back when they were first fleeing from their enslavement in Egypt. That was a time where a desperate nation of people were fleeing for their lives and came to be blocked by the waters of the Red Sea. You all remember that. A seemingly hopeless situation. They were being pressed and persecuted from behind by the armies of Pharaoh and forced to be able to go no further by the impassable waters of the Red Sea. And then God did something miraculous. Moses stood with his arms raised, at least that's what the movie told me, and the waters of the sea parted and the people were able to walk across on dry land. Just the memory of that ripples through the assembly. Joshua gives instructions for the Ark of the Covenant to be carried into the water. And as that happens, God again provides dry ground for the people to cross. this time not to escape pursuit, but to enter a land, this land, as conquerors. This is one of my favorite narratives in the Old Testament. The rise of Joshua, the unorthodox victory at Jericho, which was all God's doing in that, the overall second chance that the Israelites are given, and yet it hinges on this one moment of truth. All the pieces that have been set into place up to this point for the Israelites to do their part, it all hinges at this one moment. And what I find interesting about this particular section of the narrative is the way that God leads his people forward. Now, I imagine that the scene at the river was something along the lines of people hitting that impassable barrier that we have built and we talked about earlier, and beginning to question God as to how he expects them to follow. I don't think there's a question of, should we be doing this? I don't think there's a question of, wait, maybe we should turn back and run away. I think there's a question of, whoop, God, you've told us to go over there. How are we going to do that? That's over there. This is over here. There's this big water rushing past. As soon as I walk in there, I'm going to be way down there at the Dead Sea somewhere. And that's not where you told me I'm supposed to be. How am I supposed to get across here? I don't think it is a defeated question. I think it is just a question of practicality. And it is a question of just, what is God doing? How will this work? And God, in turn, I imagine, this is my imagination works over time sometimes. God, in turn, I imagine on the other side of the river beckoning his people on, saying, come on, we got this, I got this, let's go, everybody together with me, charge. But you see, God already knows what's going to happen. So God has already been on the path. God has already seen the way forward. God knows the direction that the Israelites need to take. God knows where the holes are in the impassable barrier. He knows what they should do because he has been there before. He has it all laid out. The problem is that the Israelites don't know any of what God knows. The problem is that we don't know what God knows, and that not knowing makes us stop and makes them stop. And so the solution for God is that he then makes a way. The solution isn't that the people build a bunch of boats or some barges or engineer a wonderful bridge or anything like that. The solution is that God makes a way. And so he looks back. And I imagine as we go, kind of this is the image that God is going on. As he looks back across the river and he says, oh, right. You guys can't see the path that I have for you here. Let me shine a flashlight on that for you so you can see what's going on. And as he shines that flashlight back so they can see, in the case, this flashlight in my mind to see the light, the path, actually dams up a whole river so that the Israelites can get across. And not just this little section, but miles up the river, he stops the water. You can imagine the people in the town of Adam going out to fish, and all of a sudden the water just kind of goes right up back and makes a wall for them as they're wondering what's happening way downstream. And the water just trickles on out as the Israelites watch this happen. And God pointing out and saying, here's your path. Here's the way you should go. This is the direction I have planned for you to go to get to where I want you to be. Go. Follow me. Come. Now, the Israelites have nothing to do with this part of the journey except for one thing. They listened to God and they trusted him when he gave them the instructions for finding the way he had set out. Did you catch that? God said, I have this end result for you. I've set the path before you. This is how you do it. And the Israelites said, great, we'll do that. Even though we don't know how it's going to turn out, but we trust, God, that you do. There are a lot of things that God asks us to do or to be a part of in this world. There are a lot of things that God is doing in this world that he has invited us to be a part of. He doesn't need us to be present for or involved in any of it, but he chooses to include us. And when he does that, he knows the exact route that we need to take in order to accomplish whatever it is that he has set before us. Where things get confused is when we think that we are the ones who have to determine the path. And when that happens, we get disoriented and confused and find ourselves either way off track or stuck in one place thinking that there's no way forward. But there is a way forward, and there is a place that we are supposed to be in, and God has already set those up for us. Now, this might be in a task that we need to do. If that's the case, God will make a way for that to happen by perhaps orchestrating the time in our daily life to do it, or by providing the resources that are needed to accomplish that task, or by putting us in the right place at the right time to meet that need. Or perhaps it might be a person that God wants us to talk to. He will provide a way. He will make a way for that conversation to happen by having both parties show up to the same place at the same time. Maybe that person that you randomly bumped into on the street because both of you were looking at your cell phones and texting and walking at the same time, which is dangerous. Maybe that was God orchestrating that moment for a conversation, for you to be able to impart a small word of grace, my apologies. Are you okay? Maybe that was that path that God made a way for you to encounter and put grace into someone's life who desperately, desperately needed it at that moment. Or maybe perhaps God does this by ensuring that the neighbor we need to talk to is out in their yard just as we get home, or by connecting us to people through mutual acquaintances. These are God encounters, and these are moments that are part of his larger plan. But what about the people and situations that we are passionate about? What about the times and moments where we say, God, I know you have a plan here, but this guy over here is on my heart. I'm passionate about that. God says, great, that's my plan. I will make a way for you to have that conversation, for you to be a resource to this person, for you to be able to bring grace and peace into their lives, for you to reflect me there. God can make a way. Whether it's for you to have a conversation, whether it's for you to serve someone in a specific way, maybe at some point where you just can't seem to get something going again, God will make a way. The bottom line for all of this is that when we are living and walking and following in God's plan, he will always know that direction in our lives, that whatever will take and will make a way for us to be able to engage in it. When we feel as though that isn't happening, it is not because God doesn't know what to do. It is because we are not willing to be obedient to God and trust God's leadership. Now, if we go back to the Israelite situation for a moment, just a brief moment, what God was asking of the people was pretty sketchy. The river was fast moving. It was overflowing. It was not safe to be in this river. And the priests were told to go into the river, and the river moving so quickly could easily sweep them off their feet. And if they're carrying the ark out, this is not a small piece of furniture. This is heavy and weighty. If they carry that out, is it okay for the ark to get into the water? What happens then? And if the water hits them and they lose their grip and the ark sails on downstream to the, what happens then with the ark? This is important stuff. Are the priests going to be able to carry it up high enough to be able to keep it out of water and safe? But in doing so, are they going to sacrifice their footing and their balance and themselves get swept off? These are all important questions of what if. But in spite of all of those possible reservations and fears, they were obedient to what God was asking. And surprise, surprise, it turned out exactly as God said. They walked into the river, and the river stopped so that the people could go where God wanted them to go, to do what he was asking them to do. Because he is God and they are not. Where are you stuck this day? What is the barrier that is in front of you that God needs to make a way through? What is holding you back from stepping out once God has cleared the way for you? God asks that you trust him in this, and that if you do, you will see him do great wonders in and through and around you. He will make a way.